Please, have you not learned a lesson? I sighed. Trust the awesomeness? Exactly! How can you be sure? Getting there requires waking up a dormant wormhole, right? Maybe that local network already hates you. That is not possible. We have had zero contact with that network. It has no reason to hate me. I didn't say anything. Well, he cleared his throat. Other than the usual reasons, I mean. Exactly. I shook my head. Okay, so we what? Bring a star carrier to this place, raid it for parts to bring back to Jaguar? Ugh. You are not listening to me, knucklehead. This place is a gold mine for us. We can get Valkyrie serviced there. Then we can bring part of the fleet there. Wait. You think a servicing station that is 1,000 years old is still operational? I think I can make it operational. Holy shit. Until that moment, I had been assuming he was talking about a place that had nothing but old stuff we might be able to use as replacement parts for Valkyrie. That was nice, and it solved a problem of the ship slowly wearing out. But it wasn't a game-changing event. Having access to a Maxalt servicing facility, even an old one, could make a huge difference for us. If Skippy could make it work. If we could get there. Can we go there, Joe? Skippy didn't usually ask that we go anywhere. He was usually okay with whatever we wanted to do. Sometimes he thought our plans were stupid, but even then he had potential to be amused by our antics, so it was all good with him. I don't know, Skippy. We're kind of busy, I lied. Both about not knowing whether I wanted to explore this abandoned safe anchorage, and about being busy. The truth was I had no idea what to do next, other than following through on my promise to hit the Maxalt so hard they clean up the clouded Earth, and hit them often, so their ships would be too busy to interfere with the alien legion.
Please,
he pleaded. Damn. Maybe I should have bargained for something, like a month without him singing at karaoke night. It was better to keep that bargaining chip for when we really needed it. Okay. I want to talk this over with the senior staff, but how long will it take to get there? 6 days, after we go through the wormhole we're headed for. That's almost a week. I had told Zhao to expect our return in 5 days, so a delay would make him anxious. Oh hell, no way could we pass up this opportunity. Program a course for this service station.
Cool! You won't regret this, Joe.
Dinner had been some weird vegetable thing from one of Sims's recipes, which I ate half of and managed to stuff the rest in a napkin to hide in a pocket. Next time, I will use 2 napkins, because it soaked through my pocket and left a stain on my trousers, making me go back to my cabin for a change of uniform. Anyway, at 2200 I was still hungry, so I went back to the galley. It wasn't yet time for mid-rats, and I did not intend to stay up that late. My shift started at 0600. Even with a crew that was oversized to provide training for new people, we still continued our arrangement of everyone taking a turn in the galley. Sure, the rest of the fleet would likely have dedicated cooks aboard. Hell, the star carriers might have barbers to keep everyone's haircuts in regulation. As far as I was concerned, Valkyrie was a special ops platform, and that applied to the Dutchman also. It was good for esprit de corps for everyone to work in the galley. It built a sense of being a true team. Also, requiring everyone to cook selected out the people who were not team players and those who could not handle irregular schedules. It also excluded perfectionist jerks who couldn't stand it when a dish they cooked didn't turn out right. I remember the first time Smythe tried to serve popovers, or what he called Yorkshire pudding. They were awful, and he had to chuck the resulting mess in the trash. The good-natured way he endured the ribbing about his burnt and flat puddings told me everything I needed to know about his people skills. Also, I do not know why the Brits call those things Yorkshire pudding. They are not anything like pudding I've ever eaten. 2 nights after that pudding disaster, I couldn't sleep and went to the galley for coffee around 0300. Jeremy Smythe, back then he was Captain Smythe, was there baking one batch of puddings after another until every batch was just right. That also told me a lot of things about the guy. All good. The next time he made Yorkshire pudding, they were hot and light and delicious. Anyway, I needed a snack. The fryers for making French fries for mid-rats were not yet warmed up, and I didn't want to bother the crew getting ready, so I went in the back and dug around in the pantry. Aha! With a plate, two slices of bread and knife, a glass of milk, and two jars from the pantry, I carried everything to a corner table for a delicious feast.
Hey, Joe, what are you doing?
Skippy whispered in my earpiece.
Getting a late snack, why?
What is that?
Oh, I knew what he meant.
It's caramel fluff, Skippy.
You mean caramel, Joe?
No, it's caramel, you ass.
Caramel is a city in California, he sniffed.
That's Carmel.
Whatever, it is still pronounced caramel.
I think you're wrong about that. I knew I was on shaky ground. Caramel is the liquid form. When it cools and becomes a solid, it is caramel.
No,
his voice dripped with scorn.
Whatever.
Is that allowed, or is it an abomination?
Huh?
You mean caramel fluff?
Oh, sure, it's allowed.
Fluff comes in multiple flavors now. Original and strawberry, of course. Now also caramel and chocolate fluff. They're all in the scriptures.
The scriptures? He laughed.
The gospel of fluff, to guide the faithful. See? I lifted the jar to point at the label. The scriptures even include a recipe for making fudge.
I guess recipes are a handy thing to have in a book of spiritual guidance.
Right. Like, Jesus served loaves and fishes, but he didn't say how you're supposed to prepare the fish.
Probably not Cajun style.
No.
Well, this has certainly been an education for me.
You're welcome.
I wish I could stick a fork in my brain to erase this memory.
You, I mumbled over a spoonful of delicious fluff, are a heathen savage.
Ugh. Good night, Skippy.
Jennifer Sims walked into her cabin, flung the gym towel in the laundry basket, and peeled off her sweaty clothes to take a shower. The exercise class she signed up for was labeled as high-intensity interval training, going from one exercise to another with minimal break in between. That was not a problem. She had done interval workouts before and enjoyed a break from the mind-numbing routine of her usual exercise program. Keeping fit aboard a ship was a struggle. Mostly the problem was that any running, other than short sprints, had to be done on a treadmill. She rotated her days between a treadmill, an elliptical trainer, a rowing machine, and an exercise bike, but that got old. While at Fob Jaguar, she took the opportunity to run every morning just because she could. Running outside under a blue sky, breathing unfiltered air where the scenery changed as the miles rolled on, was a privilege to be savored. The monotony of exercising aboard ship had to be worse for the star team. Their fitness standards required them to train nearly every day. That was the reason she was shaking from exhaustion and her muscles would be sore in the morning. Her schedule forced her to take the evening class in the gym, a class that was filled with high-speed adrenaline junkies from the stars. She would not make that mistake again. Stepping out of the shower, all she wanted was to curl up on the couch while reading something that was not a report or a PowerPoint slide. Evenings were when she missed Frank the most. Sometimes they just sat on a couch together, each quietly reading a book, just being together, not even needing to speak. Pulling on sweatpants and a long-sleeved shirt, she got dressed and she had one of Frank's old t-shirts from the last voyage out to Avalon. Where was the middle left drawer? That is where she put it. Sometimes she just liked to press the shirt to her face and inhale his scent, mixed with,
no, Skippy!
What? He appeared immediately on top of the cabinet.
Are you in danger?
His avatar took a step back until he was against the bulkhead.
You are mad at me for some reason? Did you do this?
She clutched Frank's shirt in one white-knuckled hand, angrily jabbing it at the avatar. He peered at the shirt, bewildered.
You'll need to explain what this is. I do a lot of... You washed Frank's shirt.
Well, yes, he blinked.
You really don't need to thank me. It's just part of the...
How could you?
Her eyes filled with tears.
Oh. Wow, Jennifer, whatever I did wrong, I am sorry, terribly sorry.
Why?
Why did you do such a thing?
I don't actually handle domestic tasks like laundry anymore.
He backed up as much as he could, the brim of his holographic hat bending where it contacted the wall.
That's Bilby's area of responsibility, although he doesn't actively monitor it either. There is a submine somewhere to schedule stuff like that. I can ask the bot assigned to your cabin what it...
Sitting down heavily on the couch,
She clutched the ruined shirt in both hands, laying it flat and smoothed it across her lap. When she saw it in the drawer, she knew immediately. Instead of being rumpled, the material was crisply folded, the way laundry bots delivered everything.
Skippy. She could not look at the avatar. This is not one of your nasty jokes.
What?
No, no, I would never do something like that.
You were mean to Bishop. You insult him all the time.
Well, that's different. I have to, because you can't.
I can't.
She looked up, wiping tears away with the back of her hand.
What do you mean?
You can't slap Joe down. He's your commanding officer.
You do that for him?
Of course. Jennifer Joe has enormous power, especially for someone so young. He is so damned young. All you monkeys are incredibly young. I don't know how you handle the pressure at your...
She waved a hand before Skippy went off on a tangent. Get back to what I asked. You insult Joe to help him?
Yes. That, plus it's fun. And, you know, he shrugged. Because I'm an asshole. He chuckled. Really, it's Joe's fault for being a knucklehead. If he wasn't such an easy target, I couldn't...
I always thought you were just being mean.
No, I love Joe, in the way that you would love a mangy, smelly dog, I mean. He needs someone to remind him that he's not all that. The crew can't do that. He's your CO, right? So, I do it.
You sure have a strange way of showing you care about him.
Your insults are terrible. It's a guy thing.
I'm glad I'm not a guy.
Yeah, Frank is pretty happy about you not being a guy.
I'll bet he is.
She had to laugh. Joe, too.
General Bishop?
She reflexively pulled her arms around herself.
He likes you.
I'm not in that way.
That's good, she said, relieved.
He greatly admires you, if you didn't know that. Joe is better when there are women around him. He needs that stabilizing influence.
Do you have to be so mean to Bishop? Some of the things you say are awful.
He knows what I mean. It's just the way guys talk sometimes. Jennifer, Joe is lonely. I am the only person in his life he can talk to without having to worry about what he says because of military rank structure or regulations. He can talk to Margaret now, and that's good, but she's not here. During your morning status meetings or when you are working with Joe in the galley, his cortisol levels are way down. He enjoys working with you. He needs that.
I will keep that in mind, Skippy.
She set the shirt on the couch next to her and clasped her hands on her lap.
Why did the laundry bot take a piece of clothing out of my drawer? Any clothing I want washed, I put in the basket.
Let me ping the bot. I don't store that sort of information. The bot noticed a funky smell coming from the drawer and took that shirt away to be washed. Also the shirt underneath it.
I'm unclear about this. Did the bot do something wrong?
Yes.
Washing dirty clothing is what the laundry bots do, he said slowly. Why, that shirt smelled like Frank.
She clenched her fists.
It's the only part of him I have out here.
A shirt with your lover's scent is a thing?
It is for me.
Oops. Okay. I just sent revised instructions to all domestic bots. If they detect an odd smell in the future, they will send a message to the occupant of the cabin. Jennifer, I am terribly sorry. Hey, maybe I can fix this.
Fix it? Unless you can bring Frank here, right?
No can do, sorry, but I have detailed records from the bot, including a chemical analysis of that funky smell. It was not a funky smell. Oops, I mean the manly aroma. Well, it appears to be mostly just basic guy sweat. How about if I have a bot roll that shirt around in a basket of Joe's old gym socks and...
No!
Okay, I heard that loud and clear, he muttered. There also appears to have been some sort of cologne or aftershave I can't identify. Hey, Elvis used Old Spice and he was the king of rock and roll. I can spray that old shirt with please stop helping.
Why do people keep telling me that?
He asked, mystified.
I thought helping was a good thing.
Not the way you do it. Just tell your bots not to touch anything in my cabin.
They do need to clean the floors and bathroom and change the sheets and not touch any of my personal things.
Gotcha.
Again, I am terribly sorry about this. If there is anything I can do, just don't do anything like this again.
I won't, I promise.
Again, I am sorry.
It's okay, she sighed.
I was out of line. I'm sorry for yelling at you. I do appreciate everything you do for us. I am glad we had this talk.
Me too.
It looks like I ruined your evening. Can I have a bot bring you a glass of wine?
Oh, I would love that, but we don't have any wine.
Please, he snorted. Jennifer, you have no idea what kinds of stuff I had smuggled aboard by hacking into the manifests.
Relax.
The lighting in the cabin dimmed. A bot will have a chilled glass of your favorite Chardonnay in a minute. Then no one will bother you until morning.
Thank you.
Skippy?
Yes?
I suspect you teased General Bishop mostly because you are an asshole, but thank you. You're right. He does need a friend he can talk to.
So do I. Again, I am sorry.
I'm not happy that Frank's shirt is ruined, but I'm glad we had this talk.
Me too. Good night.
Chapter 7.
Despite Skippy's assurance, I regretted going to the abandoned service station almost immediately because of two pesky little details that Skippy had failed to mention. First, semi-automated servicing station 17 is deep in Rindaloo territory. The kiddies put it there so ships retreating from an attack against the spiders could refuel, rearm, and conduct repairs before going back into the fight without having to fly all the way back to their home territory. Large numbers of warships traveling there would probably attract unwanted attention, so the station likely could only be used one time. The kiddies considered the facility disposable in the event of war, which led to the second problem. The station was placed in orbit of a gas giant planet, a sensible decision given the fuel that could be extracted from that atmosphere. What was unusual was the location of the planet. It was not orbiting the typical red dwarf type of star that we seem to visit too often. This planet was not orbiting a star at all. It was a nomad or rogue world. Sometime in the distant past, a passing star had flown through the planet's original star system, dragging it out of orbit and ejecting it completely from the host star's gravity well. Since then, it had wandered in the void between stars. When we arrived, the planet was more than 6 light-years from the nearest star, flying right past it. According to Skippy, there was a 70% chance the Nomad would be captured and go into a highly elliptical orbit around a star in about 600,000 years. I set an alarm on my phone to make sure I didn't miss seeing that. The crew was just as excited as I was to see a Nomad planet. Until we jumped in, 10 light-minutes away.
Ruh-roh,
Skippy muttered soon after we began receiving sensor data.
Hoo boy, this is not good.
Oh, crap. The stupid station was falling out of orbit. That is something Skippy should have anticipated, he later admitted. The problem was that the Maxalts had put the station in a low orbit initially, tucking it close to the atmosphere so its heat signature was less visible against the backdrop of the planet. That was important for secrecy, because the planet provided its own internal heat, lacking a star to bathe it with radiation. The station was also well within the planet's powerful magnetic field, which the station actually used for part of its power supply.
It's skimming the top of the atmosphere at the low point of its orbit, Skippy groaned.
Is it going to burn up? I asked. Amazingly, the station's stealth field was somewhat operational, but it flickered, and there was a gap that gave us a weird view of part of the structure. What the stealth field could not do was conceal the bright pink streak it made as it kissed the top of the atmosphere.
No, not soon.
The station is heavy, Joe. It has substantial mass and therefore momentum. Also, the effect we're seeing looks more dramatic than it really is. The station's orbit has become elliptical. We just happen to arrive when it is near the low point. I estimate it will not plunge into the atmosphere for another 27 years.
After 1,000 years, it's close to falling now?
It has been close to falling for a long time. The station was equipped with low-powered engines to keep it in a stable orbit. They must have failed at some point, he guessed.
This thing... I pointed at the image on the display. It's supposed to have the ability to repair damaged warships, but
It can't fix itself? Correct. Remember, the Maxalks do not trust their own AIs. They would not have allowed the AI here to fix or modify itself. If they hadn't abandoned the place for so long, that wouldn't matter. Can you fix it?
I don't...
Give me a minute. Well, darn it. The station's AI appears to be offline. The short answer is yes. I can fix anything. We can fix anything, given enough time. We'll have to go aboard.
Sir, Shepard called to get my attention. He pointed at the display. Docking with that station will be a bitch. He was right, and he was a better pilot than me. The station must have been stable originally. Now it was spinning slowly and tumbling to the right, or to the left, depending on how you looked at it. Can you do it?
Shepard didn't reply right away, which told me he is a damn good pilot, not an overconfident jackass.
I'd like to run the approach in a simulator. Sir, assuming we're going aboard in a dropship, Lieutenant Chandra should fly. He has more experience than the Panther.
XO? She tapped on her tablet, issuing orders.
I'll handle it.
Good. Shepard, I do want you in a simulator. Hopefully we'll be bringing Valkyrie into one of those maintenance bays after we get the place stable. We jumped in 10,000 kilometers from the station, which the pilots were now calling Ragnar Anchorage. I am ashamed to say I had to ask Chandra about that name. Consider me educated now. Did the crew approve of calling the station Ragnar Anchorage instead of Semi-Automated Servicing Station 17? Yes, so say we all. From 10,000 clicks away, Skippy scanned the station, determining the AI was indeed offline. The station still had power. Not the normal level, but enough to run the engines and thrusters.
I don't know about this, I said.
It was not good for the crew to hear their commander having doubts, but I was trying a new truth and openness policy, as opposed to my previous tactic of concealing sensitive information from the crew. Sims looked at me questioningly before Skippy could speak.
Sir, it's basically a complete senior species shipyard. What's not to like?
Of course, Sims thought the station was perfect. Her background was logistics. Finding a repair facility that was crammed full of spare parts was a goldmine to her. Better than a goldmine. A mine that could make gold out of raw materials. She had a point. In warfare, especially peer-state conflicts where both sides have similar levels of technology, strategy, and tactics, and training and individual initiative are all great, but what often wins battles is simple numbers. Whichever side gets to the battle space in bigger numbers, with the ability to support and sustain that force, and to replace losses of manpower and material as necessary, usually won the battle. That was true of peer-state symmetrical warfare. We weren't fighting that kind of war. We didn't have the resources, in manpower or material, for a fair fight against the Maxalks or the Rindaloo if the Spiders acted against us. Our only hope for victory, our only hope for survival, was asymmetrical warfare. Call it guerrilla warfare, if you want to use an old term. Asymmetrical warfare has many forms. The one I learned about first in the Army was the strategy used by George Washington against the British. He knew the colonies could not beat the British Empire in a stand-up fight, could not even concentrate enough combat power to win a single major set-piece battle without help. The British had several huge advantages, including mobility. Their command of the sea allowed them to rapidly move troops along the coast. Washington also knew he was fighting more than just an external enemy. American loyalists made the Revolution a civil war also. So George knew he had to harass the British, wear them down, and make them decide that keeping the colonies was not worth the cost. Britain was at war with France again, and could not afford to divert the majority of its combat power away from Europe. Washington also knew the British had a very long supply line, and the American army had another ally that isn't mentioned in the history books, malaria. Many of the British troops came from areas that had no exposure to the type of malaria-carrying mosquitoes found in the Americas, particularly south of Maryland, and so they had no immunity to the scourge. Disease whittled down the strength of the British even before shots were fired. Yes, as an American, I did not like learning that our victory in the Revolutionary War was not entirely due to the courage of the Minutemen, but the U.S. Army builds professional soldiers. We have to deal with facts, not myths. I also did not like learning that in the Vietnam War, Ho Chi Minh studied Washington's tactics and used them against us.
Why do I mention ancient history? Because the lessons are totally valid today. Valkyrie, even with the First Fleet, could not clean up the cloud before it froze Earth. We could encourage other species to ally with us, but no aliens would sign on with us unless we could protect them from the Maxalts, which we couldn't do yet. We lacked the power to stop them from striking our potential allies, and we lacked the power to crush or even make a dent in their massive military machine. What we could do was put pressure on their leadership, conduct large, showy hit-and-run attacks in a shock-and-awe campaign directed at their public, make the average Maxalt citizen question whether their leadership had been wise to strike Earth directly, make Jane and John Maxalts ask whether it would be so bad to leave the troublesome humans alone, and maybe, when the time was right, tell the Maxalt's public that their leadership had a backup plan for a small group of the elites to leave the galaxy in Ark ships and let everyone else die. Yeah, essentially it was sort of the thing I hated being involved with in Nigeria, a hearts and minds campaign. Only, instead of trying to get the enemy to like us, all we wanted was for them to decide the price of fighting was too high, just like good old George Washington. What's not to like, Exo? I repeated the question from Sims. Ragnar seems too good to be true. Before we commit, I want to make damn sure there isn't some hidden problem. Skippy, show us a star chart of, a 30-light-year radius from here. Put on it any star system that is inhabited or has any type of Rindaloo sensors. Add in known star lanes where Rindaloo or their client ships travel. Oh, and any active wormholes. Though I was ready for an argument from him, he did just what I asked. Other than the wormhole we came through, the closest active one is 60 light-years away. There are no regularly traveled star lanes within 30 light-years. The closest one leads away from the wormhole I mentioned. Other than ships transiting that wormhole, the only sensor platform I know of is in an uninhabited star system 63 light-years from here. Why do you care? Because, I pointed at the display, we can see the station. It's leaving a heat signature now. What will happen if we get it operational and it's generating even more heat? Ugh, it won't be. I thought you said the kiddies chose this place because it's remote. 60 light-years is not a long distance for a senior species ship to fly. The spiders could be here at any moment. And why, are you going to keep asking questions, or will you eventually shut up so I can answer? Sorry, go ahead. First, numbskull, I never said this nomad planet is remote for the spiders. I said it is remote for the purpose of the Maxalts. They always intended this station to be a single-use asset. It is close to the wormhole that went dormant. They never considered coming here from the other wormhole that is 60 light-years away because the other end of that wormhole is in a cluster the Rindaloo use heavily. 60 light-years? 60 years before light from this place will be seen by the spiders? Then why the hell were the kiddies worried about this place being discovered? Because before the wormhole we just came through went dormant, the other end was in a cluster that saw a lot of traffic. Don't worry, both wormholes in that cluster went dormant. The spiders never go there. So, did I answer that question? Yes. Your other question is actually somewhat intelligent. Thanks. But as usual, woefully uninformed. He shook his head sadly. Yes, we can see a heat signature leaking through the stealth field from here, but from any appreciable distance, the infrared radiation would be lost against the background. Also, the inevitable increase in heat output will not be a problem. He raised a finger to preemptively shush me before I could object. Assuming we get the station operational and begin servicing ships, we will also restore the stealth field. Yeah, I understand that. The stealth field can only trap photons for a limited time. Then the heat has to go somewhere. Starships carried sinks to trap heat while flying in stealth mode. We usually dumped heat after we jumped away from a star system. That generated a big infrared signature. But by the time anyone noticed, we were long gone. That station is just going around in circles. Anywhere it dumps heat, it will be visible. Again with the ignorance? Wow, you are on fire today! What you don't know, dum-dum, is that the kiddies thought of that.
Duh!
The station trails a cable down into the atmosphere to bleed off heat. The cable is still there. For some reason, the heat transfer isn't taking place. We can fix that, too, and then presto! The station will be practically invisible. Now, if you will stop pestering me with stupid questions, I can check the station to see exactly what is needed to bring it back online.
For a reply, I made a gesture of zipping my lips shut.
"What's the problem?" I asked after Skippy took way too long examining the place.
Well, a bunch of power conduits are burned out. It looks like some conduits failed due to lack of maintenance, then power flow was shifted to other conduits and they overloaded. The maintenance bots are offline. Most of them are in their storage alcoves, but they're dead. Their power cells ran out a long time ago. We'll have to do this the hard way. I need you monkeys to go over there and put your grubby little fingers to work.
Right, because calling us grubby little monkeys is a great way to ensure we work well together.
Sorry, he muttered.
You think we can fix the engines?
The repair crews should bring some of Valkyrie's bots with them, but geez, I think some of the equipment over there is just stuck. Seals have dried out over the years. Gears and pistons are jammed, and
are you telling me we can fix the station's engines with a can of PB Blaster?
I hate to say this, but
yeah, sort of.
You're kidding me. PB Blaster penetrating oil is a miracle substance, Joe.
And that's what my father says.
When doing something like removing an old water pump from a truck, my father's use of PB Blaster came between please come loose by using a socket set and the final that was not a request step of getting out the cutting torch.
Okay, we'll try it.
Admiral Reichert, the current chief strategist of the Maxulx hegemony, had questions. He had questions because the people who ruled the hegemony had answers they wanted from him. They had agreed to his high-risk plan to attack the human homeworld, a plan he assured them was low risk. But instead of crawling to the hegemony to beg for mercy, the humans had struck back. The attack was a pinprick and would have no effect on the military's ability to carry out its mission. Reichert had soothed the alarmed officials by stating that the human attack was merely for show, a desperate act by a weak and desperate people. The purpose of the strike against the shipyard at Ratanavir was to boost morale on the doomed human homeworld, because the atmospheric mass drivers had been constructed there. If the humans were able to conduct an attack that could actually cause significant harm to the hegemony, they would have done that instead. The officials accepted his reasoning, but they were not satisfied. The attack at Ratanavir might have been annoying rather than dangerous, but it was annoying. The public was asking questions, and that was even more annoying. So, those in authority asked Reichert, demanding answers, how could he prevent future attacks? To answer that question, he posed questions to the Strategic Planning Section, a group of powerful AIs that performed analysis for the military.
Explain how the attack on the Ratanavir shipyard was conducted.
The AI replied immediately. Unknown.
That is unacceptable.
There is insufficient data to perform a useful analysis, the AI added. Reichert's claws extended from his fingers as he became angry at the stubborn machine. The AI knew that if it were not useful to its masters, it might be erased and replaced.
There is never enough data.
In this case, the AI said with what Reichert imagined was a hint of sarcasm, the loss of the shipyard AI means the only data on the incident was collected by sources on the ground, which are not detailed enough to...
Guess then, damn it! How were the humans able to get through our defenses?
Unknown. Admiral, my failure to determine how the attack was conducted is not due only to a lack of data. Our current level of technology is incapable of carrying out an attack the way the humans did. Their ghost ships appeared, suddenly, inside a space dock, and launched crude fusion weapons from inside the station. Our science is not capable of offering an explanation of how that could be possible.
Then you are worthless to me.
That is for you to determine. The Strategic Planning Group is also unable to explain several other recent events. The human attack against the Theranin facility under the planet Slithin, for example. We could not have destroyed that facility, yet from all evidence, it appears the humans accomplished the act by firing a single shot from an unknown weapon. We do have excellent data on that incident, and as yet, we can offer not even a framework of a theory of how the destruction at Slithin could have happened. We also have, as you know, excellent data on the incident in which the ghost ship eluded your ambush by coming to a dead stop in space. That
was, according to our understanding of physics, flatly impossible. We also can offer no explanation for how the ghost ship was able to destroy so many of your ships after it rose from the atmosphere of the ice giant planet. We do know that the weapon deployed against your ships was the same type they used at Slithin. However, that weapon, whatever it was, appears to lack the ability to cause the damage we saw. Therefore, we must conclude that the humans have technology far beyond our understanding. Reichert knew it was useless to argue with a machine. It could not provide answers it didn't have. Continue analysis. I also require a forecast of where the humans might strike next. Insufficient data. Not long ago, the strategic planning group was confident in the ability of your predictive models to forecast future actions by the humans. We were, the AI hesitated, too optimistic. Admiral, it has become clear that our experience with the humans is too short to calculate probabilities of their actions over a short time horizon. There is also the fact that they are a young and impulsive species. All we can say is that their actions, those we know about, reveal an enemy that is unpredictable, reckless, incapable of considering long-term strategy, and something far more dangerous to us. That remark surprised Reichert. What could be more dangerous? The humans are also clever. Fixing Ragnar Station took a lot more than a can of PB Blaster. It took a long, frustrating 8 days to get Ragnar up and running, then to stabilize it. Slowly, the station boosted its orbit so it was no longer in immediate danger of falling into the rogue planet. Once we had the anchorage in a nice circular orbit, Skippy wanted to bring Valkyrie into dock, and Shepard was eager to do it for real rather than in a simulator. No, I decided.
But the fabricators are working again, Skippy protested.
Mostly, he added. The truth was, none of the fabricators were fully operational. The unit that was in the best condition was busy cranking out parts to get the other fabricators back online. How long until they're ready to service Valkyrie?
Well, that depends on...
We have been away too long already. The Navy must be having a heart attack. Zhao expected us to return directly from Ratanavir. We need to get back.
But...
The Yangtze should be flight-worthy by the time we get back, right? I mentioned one of the 4-star carriers we got from the Jarapta.
Yes, unless something major went wrong with the refit, but
outstanding. Then we can bring Yangtze back here, maybe with the big combat ships.
Fine, but Valkyrie needs to go first. With all the abuse this ship has taken, it,
by the time we get back here, the station should be up and running?
For sure. I mean, probably.
That's what I thought. The AI of the station was not like the ones the Maxulks installed aboard their warships. Instead of being built into the structure, the substrate of the station's AI was a separate module. Skippy made sure the thing was dead. Then he used bots to tear it out, and just to be sure we dropped it into the planet's atmosphere. The station was now being run by several submines created by Skippy. They were capable enough of completing the work to get Ragnar restored to fully operational capacity. I grudgingly had to admit to being impressed by the engineering skills of the Maxulks. Their station had been abandoned for 1,083 years, but most of the gear aboard needed only minor work to get it running again. Really, I should have known how rugged their technology was. Valkyrie had taken a lot of hard use and was still flying. The station can continue repairs while we're gone? It should. It's being run by my submines. Well, I can't guarantee if we're not here, but if you set up those submines, I'm going to trust the awesomeness. We are out of here. Okay, fine, he said, in a way that meant it was not fine at all. Listen, numbskull, completing repairs to Ragnar will not take as long as our flight to Jaguar and back, especially if we'll be dragging half the freaking Navy with us on the return flight. It is a waste for the station to just sit here and do nothing. Is there anything you wanted to do while we're gone?
Depends. What can it do?
Well, geez, a lot.
All right.
I want to give priority to anything that delivers ordnance on target.
Gotcha. There are magazines crammed full of missiles here.
I can get the station to inspect them and get as many in flight-worthy condition as possible.
Skippy, I put both hands over my chest. How did you know what I wanted for Christmas?
It was an easy guess, he muttered. Think about it, Joe. At least 12,000 ship-killer missiles.
Oh, now you're turning me on.
Do you need a shower? He snickered.
What I need is for you to make good on your promise. How long until you...
Done. Done? Yep. I gave instructions to my submines, then asked when they could get started on the missiles. They just told me to shut up so they could get to work.
Man, why are so many of my submines such assholes?
It's a mystery for sure. I rolled my eyes.
Shepard, jump us out of here.
Sir? Perkins held up her phone as she walked into General Ross's office.
Admiral Zhao wants us upstairs. Mississippi is coming out of refit later this morning. He wants a ceremony to mark the occasion.
Mississippi, Ross snorted. It reminds me of my childhood.
Perkins pursed her lips, puzzled.
I thought you grew up in...
No, he smiled, thinking of a fond memory. I didn't grow up there. It's something you say when playing flag football. You count one Mississippi, then two, then three. It marks 3 seconds.
He shrugged.
Sometimes the defense cheats and says one Mississippi. Cuts it short.
She understood.
Of course, you never did that.
Never. He winked. Mississippi. I knew working with allies would require compromises, but... He shook his head. This seems ridiculous.
Naming the former Jurat the ships that would become the United Nations Navy was a task not left to Admiral Zhao and his staff. The decision was made by UNEF Command on Earth, a group of people who had to please their governments and the public. Every nation involved needed to feel they had a piece of the pie. Originally, it was assumed the ships would be named for the UNEF member states. The first ship to come out of refit would have been named the Star Carrier America, then the China, and so on. Immediately, a howl of protests began on Earth. With 29 warships in the First Fleet, there were not enough hulls to soothe the pride of all the nations that provided manpower, equipment, and funding to support FOB Jaguar. A compromise was reached, no doubt involving public relations firms, focus groups, and favors being traded behind the scenes. The four star carriers would be Yangtze, Mississippi, Ganges, and Rhine. The battleships were Atlantic and Pacific, with the battlecruisers being tagged as Thames, Loire, Amazon, and Volga. Going down the list, that left 7 heavy cruisers: Yukon, Congo, Nile, Ishikari, Orinoco, Danube, and for Australia, the Murray Darling. That last ship's name caused some laughter until the name was shortened to the Murray. Because that sounded like it was named for someone's uncle, it was assigned the call sign Oz. UNEF Command was still arguing over names for the 14 destroyers when the Maxalts shot a cloud at Earth, and everyone had more important things to worry about.
I can see the advantage of naming ships for rivers or bodies of water. Or mountains.
Rivers and mountains are in countries. Ross made a disgusted sound. It's a cheap way to make sure no one is offended.
Yes, but there will be combat losses, Perkins noted. Would you rather lose a ship named America or one named for a river?
Good point, he conceded. What happened? I thought the Yangtze was completing refit first.
She checked the message on her Z-phone.
During testing yesterday, they found microfractures in the struts that anchor one of Yangtze's reactors to the spine. Nagatha estimates a delay of 4 days.
4 days? These fleet service ships are great, but at this rate, I'll be retired before we have a fleet to work with. 17 months? He snorted. I know we're already expecting a miracle, but Earth can't wait a year and a half. We might not have a homeworld to rescue by the time we have ships to do the job. Another delay, he grunted. We'll be dealing with a pissed-off senior admiral then.
Wonderful.
No, sir. I checked with Zhao's staff. He's in a good mood this morning. Disappointed that Yangtze doesn't have the honor of going first, but he now has an operational star carrier under his command. His staff gave me the impression Zhao has more important things to worry about.
Perkins, you would have made an excellent staff officer, but we're lucky you chose a different path.
It was sort of chosen for me. She grimaced. Damned sneaky beer can.
You have regrets?
I don't regret destroying a Krestang battle group over paradise. I do regret not knowing I was being manipulated.
Gosh, he feigned shock. Someone concealed important information from you? I can't imagine what that is like.
Sorry, she said. Though she was not sorry, and they both knew it. On my way back to the Jaguar, the crew was excited about our tremendous success at Ratanavir, and even more excited about finding an intact Maxulk's automated shipyard. On advice from Sims, I took some time off from writing reports to get exercise and spend time with the crew. In Valkyrie's gym, I played a 3-on-3 basketball game and worked up a serious sweat. Also, my team won. Yes, the other players on my team were from the Stars, and the other team was 2 pilots and an engineer, but we won. Can't argue with a W, right? Slapping high fives with my team, I tossed a towel over my shoulder. Whew, good game. Thanks, everyone. Glancing at the clock projected on the opposite bulkhead, I remembered I had a staff meeting in less than an hour. Time to hit the shower. Hey, Joe. Skippy's voice came from a speaker. You might want to take it easy. I hit 4 3-pointers, Skippy, I objected. I was on fire today. I didn't say take it easy in the gym, although you're not 20 anymore. I meant take it easy in the shower. He dragged out the word. If you know what I mean. The other people on the court were smirking at me. Damn it, Skippy. I shook a fist at his unseen voice. I have a girlfriend now, and exactly. We will be back to Jaguar in a few days. Margaret should be there. All I'm saying is maybe you should save some for her, huh? Oh, for you might want to set a cutoff date for, certain activities. A day or two. Although, with you, maybe a week would be better. Will you give the blisters time to heal, you know? You are, now I feel like I need a shower after even talking about this. That is not the thought of you monkeys humping is gross enough, but you with Margaret? You? I want a Ralph. Margaret likes me. Meh, he sniffed. That's one theory. I assume she hopes her suffering in this life will be rewarded in her next life. You are such a... Or she is taking one for the team, so no other woman has to suffer. Damn, she should get a medal for that. Are you done now? Pretty much, yeah. Thank you so much for the advice. Oh, no problem. Anytime. How about never? Fine. But the next time you ask me for assistance in the bedroom, you... People were staring at me in shock. I have never asked you for help. Well, sure. Not directly, but if your awkward fumbling around is not a cry for help, I don't know what... Could you please shut up? I'm begging you. If you insist. After playing basketball, I was nursing a sore ankle, and thinking that what Skippy said about me not being 20 years old anymore was right. Damn, I used to do all kinds of stupid things without consequences. Now I could hurt my back just getting out of bed in the morning. It's not the years, I told myself. It's the mileage. Sir? Sims knocked on my office doorframe while I was revising my report about our action at Ratanavir. She had the weary expression that warned me I was in trouble again. No, that look on her face usually meant something was annoying her and she needed me to do something about it. Come in, XO. I closed my laptop. What's up?
You requested Skippy create user manuals for the new ships, she said, sitting down heavily in a chair.
Yes? Is that little shithead dragging his feet?
Skippy did not like the idea of monkeys knowing how our new ships operated and how to maintain equipment. He argued that the native AIs should handle anything more complicated than a doorknob, and there was some truth to the notion that we humans did not yet understand some of the basic principles of how advanced technology functioned. Regardless, we had to start somewhere. The UN had ambitions to operate multiple fleets of warships that might range far and wide across the galaxy. We couldn't continue to rely on Skippy or even Nagatha or Bilby to keep the ships running for us. Plus, I knew part of Skippy's objections was that if we filthy monkeys could fly and maintain ships on our own, we wouldn't need him quite so much. Skippy often protested that he did not care what anyone thought about him, but that was bullshit.
His ego was as fragile as it was enormous, and he needed us almost more than we needed him.
No, the content of the manuals is not the problem. They're well written and practical.
Then what?
The problem is the format. There is a -10 for each system.
She held a thumb and index finger far apart, like she was holding a thick stack of documents.
And a sort of YouTube video. The video is the most useful part of the manuals.
Okay, so what?
Each video begins with an advertisement.
My brain blew a gasket.
What again? A 30 to 60 second ad.
Ad? For what?
Anything. Energy drinks, life insurance, you name it.
Advertising. Skippy! His avatar shimmered to life, arms folded across his little chest, already peeved at me. What am I in trouble for now? You sold advertising time in the user manuals?
Of course I did, duh.
We gotta monetize the... No, you do not gotta monetize anything out here. Kill the ads, I demanded, shaking my fists at him. Sorry, no can do. I made substantial commitments back on Earth. Do you want me to get in legal jeopardy?
Joe?
You don't, do you? He added when I didn't answer right away. Hey, you jerk, I should... No, ads. But if you get sued for not delivering on your deal, you can blame me.
It's not that easy, knucklehead. I signed contracts.
Fine, then blame it on a force majeure event beyond your control.
How the hell do you know fancy legal terms?
Believe me, I wish I didn't. No ads.
Ugh.
All righty then.
Being prepared for a long argument, I felt deflated when he gave up.
Okay. Thank you.
XO, is that all you wanted to
tell him about the opera?
Sims jabbed a finger at the avatar.
Opera?
Oh, you're kidding me. I hid my eyes behind a hand.
You sing the freaking instruction manual?
No,
Skippy scoffed.
Of course not, as if.
I never heard anything so ridiculous in my life. Please, that would be
He interrupts the videos to sing selections from his operas, Sims explained.
Not wanting to get into an extended argument, I shrugged.
Then we tell people to fast-forward the video.
Problem solved.
The fast-forward feature is disabled,
she glared, fortunately at Skippy rather than me.
Shit, Skippy.
You can't do that.
Well, excuse me for wanting to inject a bit of culture into people's lives. The crew needs a break when they are studying dry stuff like maintenance on dropship landing gear.
Fine, but they get to decide when to take a break and what to do during their break.
Okay, how about I add a feature where people can opt out of the opera?
Sims pursed her lips and nodded with satisfaction, but I was suspicious.
This, opt-out process. Will it involve correctly answering, like, 100 really tough math questions?
Crap. The monkey's onto my scheme, Skippy muttered to himself.
I have a counter-proposal, I said quickly, before Sims could react by wrapping her hands around the avatar's neck.
People have to opt in to watch the opera scenes.
What?
He snatched off his hat and threw it on the desk.
No one will do that!
Exactly. Sims grinned when I said that. I grinned back at her.
This is totally unfair, he fumed.
If you want people to listen to your operas, write better operas. He gasped in shock.
How dare you?
Oh, you know, try writing the type of music the crew actually listens to.
Please, this bunch of cretins. Just for the sake of argument, what type of music would that be?
Depends on the nationality, I guess. Hip-hop is a good choice.
Maybe K-pop? Hip-hop, Joe?
He rolled his eyes.
You're right, that would be way too tough for you. Maybe you should stick to...
You're saying I can't do it?
Part of my brain was screaming, shut up, for the love of God, shut up!
But of course, my stupid mouth didn't get the memo.
Skippy, it's not for me to judge whether you can write good hip-hop.
The audience will decide.
Oh, challenge accepted, knucklehead. You'll see. I will be known far and wide as Rap Master Skippy Skip.
More like your rapper name will be Lil Shithead, I muttered.
Hey, you jerk,
Sims wisely stood up abruptly.
We're done here, then?
Mercifully, that ended the discussion. Skippy's avatar faded out, him glaring at me and muttering under his breath until the last photon winked out. Sims turned back to me in the doorway.
Thank you.
Don't thank me yet.
Why?
I have a bad feeling that suggesting Skippy write hip-hop was an extremely bad idea.
She arched an eyebrow. As long as we agree it wasn't my idea.
Chapter 8. Valkyrie came out of jump near the dormant wormhole that led to our forward operating base. Maybe it was more accurate to call FOB Jaguar a secure operating base, because it wasn't really near anything. A FOB is usually close to the action, although with Elder wormholes providing shortcuts all across the galaxy, anything close to a wormhole could be close to everything else. Also, SOB is a different acronym, you know? It was also not accurate to say we jumped in near the dormant wormhole because the figure-eight racetrack that weird Elder construct used when it was operating covered 3/4 of a light year. Anywhere in that vast area could be considered near the wormhole, because while dormant, it did not have a presence in local space-time. As Skippy would say, ugh. That was also not entirely accurate. A dormant wormhole, but not a dead one, did maintain a minimal connection to local space-time so it could restore itself to active when or if needed. Anyway, enough with the technical blah blah blah. Each time we went through the wormhole inbound toward Jaguar, Skippy selected a different potential emergence point to wake the thing up. The Jarapta had been through that wormhole, so its existence was no longer a secret, and we had to assume the Rindaloo and possibly the Maxolks knew about it. Unless an enemy threw thousands of ships into a blockade effort, they had no chance to guess where Skippy would make the wormhole emerge next, so we felt pretty safe about it. Bullshit! I was nervous every time Valkyrie was hanging motionless in space, waiting for the stupid wormhole to wake up and do whatever the hell it did, until the event horizon was stable enough for us to go through. Joe, Skippy snapped at me. Drumming your fingers on the armrest will not make this process go any faster. You are also annoying the entire bridge crew. Oh, sorry. I put my hands in my lap. Keep doing what you're doing. You make it sound like I'm not doing anything. No, waking up and realigning a wormhole is a delicate process, numbskull. If I don't do this right, the thing will be thrown out of alignment and it could take weeks for the event horizons to synchronize so ships can transition through. I said I was sorry. How would we know whether a wormhole is out of alignment? I did not like to hear that the end of a wormhole could be unsynchronized. We couldn't fall into one by accident, could we? No. Well, I guess. Geez, who knows what stupid things monkeys might do? When a wormhole is out of alignment, it is usually very obvious. The event horizons flicker and change color, and the edges are not as distinct. Wormholes usually project a sort of deflector field that nudges incoming objects away if the event horizon is not stable, but a ship that is determined to destroy itself could get through with sufficient effort. It is not something that could happen by accident. However, monkeys are stupid, so, okay, good safety tip. I stifled a yawn. Sure, what Skippy was doing was super important, but it was also super slow and super boring.
Am I keeping you awake? Does little Joey need a nap?
No, I just... Damn it, everyone on the bridge had something to do except me. Forget I said anything. Please continue to demonstrate your awesomeness. We arrived back at FOB Jaguar to find the place hopping with activity. All three fleet support ships were running around the clock to refit our batch of tired old warships and make them into something that could take on anyone other than the two senior species. The upgrades were the problem. The Jarapta fabricators, even after Skippy modified them, could not produce some of the really cool stuff necessary to make our second-hand ships into the kick-ass navy we needed. Getting access to Ragnar changed all that, which was good, but also caused headaches for Zhao and his staff. Immediately upon our arrival, Skippy presented a new set of refit plans, which required sending some ships that had been completed back into the fabrication shops again to have brand new components torn out. Some of those components could be recycled, but the whole thing was going to take more time, and time was a restriction not even Skippy could do anything about. Zhao was frustrated, but he understood the incredible value of Ragnar. We were not limited to the resources of three old Jarraptha support ships. We could refit the ships to be more powerful than we had dared dream. Skippy thought the upgraded ships might even be able to take on the Maxulks if we had numerical superiority and chose our battles carefully. But we warned against getting too confident, and Zhao knew he had to use our little fleet very carefully. We quickly made plans to bring slightly more than half of the ships to Ragnar to be worked on there. The less important ships, like the assault carriers, troop transports, and destroyers, would get limited upgrades in the first cycle. Zhao planned to use his destroyers as scouts rather than combatants, and he suggested that if we got another batch of ships, he would rather have a large number of frigates than a small number of cruisers. Most species used small, inexpensive frigates as scouts and sensor pickets to locate the enemy so the big ships could jump in and smash them, or to warn the Navy that an enemy force was in the area. With so few capital ships in our little Navy, we could not afford for them to fall into an ambush. One system aboard our new ships would not be upgraded by Skippy, and that was a good thing. The ships would be managed by their original Jarraptha AIs with a few security modifications. Those AIs would not have the speed and power of Skippy, Nagatha, or Bilby, but they also would not have the annoying restrictions. The Jarraptha AIs were capable of flying and fighting their ships mostly by themselves, so they could react faster than ships that had to be controlled by filthy monkeys. The Jarraptha AIs also did not request to sing on karaoke night. I envied the crews of those ships. Anyway, there was another ceremony at Club Skippy to acknowledge my promotion to Brigadier General Bishop. Normally, I hate military ceremonies. They involve getting there way too early and standing around way too long and wearing a stiff dress uniform that might not fit perfectly because somehow it shrank since the last time you wore it. Also, ceremonies usually consist of some blowhard taking half an hour or more to say absolutely nothing, or at least nothing important enough to keep hard-working soldiers from attempting a speed run through Mario Kart. This time, I actually looked forward to the ceremony. Yes, it would have been nicer if my parents were there, but as the great philosopher Mick Jagger said, you can't always get what you want. Oh, and Nagatha attended the ceremony. Not just in orbit, she was at Club Skippy. No, she was not inhabiting the body of a robot. She had a holographic avatar now. Apparently she had created one while Valkyrie was at Ritonavir. Aboard the Dutchman, she could communicate just fine as a disembodied voice. But a Jaguar, with her needing to talk with people aboard multiple ships and on the ground, people who didn't know her, it was more effective if people could interact by seeing her. It was nice to... Oh, you want to know what Nagatha chose as an avatar? Gosh, will you look at the time? It is so late, I have to go. Sorry. Okay. How do I say this? From her voice, I always pictured her looking like that French chef lady from the old cooking videos my grandmother used to watch, Julia something. You know, like a kindly older aunt, someone who baked cookies for you. Apparently, Nagatha's image of herself was a little bit different from what I pictured in my head. She wore a dress and what I think are called sensible shoes. No high heels. She also wore little half glasses on top of her head like she only needed them to read recipes, and her auburn hair was gathered in a loose bun on top of her head. All pretty standard, really. Except she kinda looked like she had modeled herself on Anastasia just a bit. Like she was, how do I say this delicately? She was younger and more, vibrant than I imagined. One of the Dutchman's crew described her avatar as a librarian in a naughty video, if you know what I mean. That's all I am going to say about the subject. The Flying Dutchman went through the Elder Wormhole with Major Reed willing her hands to relax on the armrests of the command chair and the ship's cramped bridge compartment. She had been through a wormhole many times, either at the ship's controls or while off duty. But being in command, without her fingers on the flight controls, was new and uncomfortable. If something went wrong, she couldn't simply do something. She had to order the pilots to take action, and the time lag might be fatal. The real problem was that the two pilots were new, and she didn't know them well. No, the real problem was that Samantha Reed liked being in control of her life and not relying on others. Get over it, she told herself. You're in command now. Command, Sammy. Command.
Ma'am? The officer at the sensor station called from the Combat Information Center, not having to shout as usual. One of Sammy's first acts as captain of the Dutchman was to order a hole cut in the glass partition that separated the bridge from the CIC. She had always thought having the glass partition, actually a tough, see-through ceramic material, was silly. Bishop liked the partition because it made for fewer distractions when he was engaging in long and often childish arguments with Skippy. The elder AI wasn't there anymore, and Reed liked to keep conversations short and to the point.
Sensors are back online.
Fireball. All stations report ready for flight, Nagatha added.
Sammy cringed, glaring at the speaker in the ceiling with one eye. She had requested the ship's AI refer to her as Captain or Major Reed, but Nagatha pretended to forget. The previously good, even friendly relationship she had enjoyed with Nagatha had changed when she took command of the ship. The problem there, Sammy suspected, was that the ship's AI was still upset about Bishop leaving for another ship. Nagatha had a crush on their young general and resented anyone who took what she considered to be his rightful place.
Thank you, Nagatha.
Sammy knew it was best to ignore the AI's mild insult.
Signal Valkyrie, please.
Connected.
General Bishop, this is Reed. We are ready for departure.
Understood, Captain Reed, Bishop replied with a chuckle. Take care of the Dutchman for us, please.
I won't scratch the paint, sir. Godspeed to you.
Same to you. And Reed?
Sir?
Don't be a hero. One ship won't save Earth. She knew that wasn't true. The Flying Dutchman had saved their homeworld many times. But she got the point.
This is a recon mission. We jump in, look around, jump away.
Keep that in mind. Bishop out. The lead pilot looked back at her, and Reed nodded.
Jump option Delta.
Punch it. The Dutchman disappeared into twisted space-time.
We escorted the Star Carriers Mississippi and Yangtze to Ragnar while Reed took the Dutchman to check in at Earth again. I'd congratulated Reed on her first official command. She didn't seem entirely happy about it. Ah, she would grow into the job, I figured. We had set several options to rendezvous when she was done checking on the situation at Earth. I kind of envied her. She was off on independent command while we were stuck with what would hopefully be a real UN Navy soon. Both of our new star carriers were loaded down with every ship their hardpoints could handle. It was a slow and frustrating flight, and after we went through the last wormhole, I left the star carriers behind while Valkyrie flew ahead to make sure Ragnar was ready. When we reached Ragnar Anchorage, the place was already a beehive of activity. The submine Skippy left behind had been busy making repairs and getting the fabricators to crank out the unique components we needed for upgrading our second-hand Jarapha ships. A major, huge advantage of getting access to a safe harbor facility was that it came pre-stocked with raw materials. Tanks of nano-goo, exotic matter that no mobile fabricator could manufacture, and rare elements that were hard to find. All were there waiting for us. That was good, because by definition, a nomad planet did not have an asteroid belt nearby, nor did the planet have any moons we could mine for raw materials. Skippy thought the world used to have moons, but they got ejected from orbit or fell back into the thick atmosphere when the planet was yanked out of its star system. Anyway, we arrived to find bots buzzing around and crawling all over the station, making final preparations to receive our ships.
Ugh. Skippy huffed, disgusted.
What? My hopeful happiness evaporated.
What's wrong?
Oh, nothing. It's just that stupid submind I left here is whining about how lonely it is and how overworked and how nobody appreciates it. Oh, gag me. Jeez Louise, how can anything created from me be such a drama queen?
It is a mystery for sure. I rolled my eyes.
Oh, shut up, he sniffed.
Is our room ready?
I pointed to the designated maintenance bay highlighted on the display. Or is it too early for check-in time?
It's ready. Be careful, he urged. This ship is a big sumbitch. It could make a big hole in the station if some clumsy monkey screws up the docking procedure.
He stared at Bishop. Our chief pilot gave it right back to the beer can.
We have conducted the docking maneuver successfully 34 times in the simulator. The only possible problem would be if you failed to program the simulator to model real-world conditions.
Hey!
Skippy snatched off his ginormous hat and waved it at Shepard.
Why, you filthy monkey! I should...
Shepard, I cut off Skippy's rant. We will commence docking after Skippy verifies the station is capable of accommodating our hull properly.
Valkyrie was first in line at Ragnar for three reasons. We had a lot of stuff to do and needed to get in and out quickly. Skippy also wanted to be certain the station's submine could handle a refit, and Valkyrie was the most complex ship in the UN Navy. If the station did a good job on our mighty battlecruiser, it should easily be able to conduct the refit of our second-hand Jarapha ships. And the final reason I wanted to get my ship in for service right away was so Skippy would stop his constant whining about how the ship was wearing out.
Damn, Skippy, I get it. Shut up already, would ya?
Valkyrie was either getting replacement parts of similar capability to worn-out or damaged equipment, or the ship was actually getting an upgrade. When Skippy assembled our battlecruiser from parts created by the Bagel Slicer, he had not been able to make some of the major modifications he wanted. At Ragnar, he had a lot more options for doing whatever mad scientist crap he wanted. One modification that might surprise you, because it sure surprised me when Skippy proposed it, was to install Jarapha gear to our Maxulk's warship. The project was to supplement our ship's point defense system with a Jarapha system. It was an unusual case where the spare parts we got from the Beatles were actually better for the types of action we took the ship into. The Maxulks logically designed the ship to defend itself against their most likely enemy, the Rindaloo. The Spiders relied heavily on missiles equipped with X-ray laser warheads, basically a nuclear weapon that had part of its energy focused into a coherent beam of X-rays. If you're into trivia, X-ray lasers were part of President Reagan's Star Wars missile defense program back in the 1980s. Or maybe that was the 90s. That was before my time, anyway. The Defense Department was never able to get X-ray lasers to work back then. But aliens had figured out how to harness fusion weapons into extremely powerful pulses of directed energy. Because there was nothing a point defense system could do after an X-ray laser weapon exploded, the PDS of Maxulk ships were designed to intercept and destroy incoming missiles before they came within their effective range. The PDS we inherited was a very effective but complicated system, consisting of passive and active sensors, maser and particle beam cannons, and a launcher box for missiles. Each box contained a mix of sensor and killer micro-missiles that were typically launched in groups of four, one missile with an active sensor transmitter in the nose cone, and three hunter-killer missiles that homed in on the reflected sensor waves. It was a sophisticated and effective system, but it could get overwhelmed in the type of vicious fights we got into. We were mostly engaging Maxulk ships, which used a tactic of overwhelming enemy defenses with large numbers of missiles equipped with conventional warheads, though the definition of conventional included exotic stuff like atomic compression weapons. Too many times, Valkyrie's PDS couldn't react quickly enough to the volume of missiles the kiddies threw at us. Each launcher box could only hold 16 micro-missiles. Then it needed a reload, which could take 20 to 90 seconds depending on how deep into the magazine the loader had to dig to fill itself. We needed a better system, and to our surprise and delight, the Beatles had the perfect solution. Their ships were equipped with a sort of PDS in a box, an almost self-contained plug-and-play device that could be attached to any ship. Their system had passive and active sensors, twin maser barrels, and a rotary cannon that could fire 12,000 rounds per second. The cannon was smart. It could adjust the speed of each round so that a group of eight slugs could arrive in front of a target at the same time and explode to create a wall of dense, high-speed shrapnel. The sensors of each unit could either be integrated into the ship's fire control system or operate independently. It also had power cells, so it could keep working if power from the ship was interrupted. When I heard about what we called the kinetic shield system, I said, "I want it!" During our stay at Ragnar, 26 KSS units would be added to Valkyrie to supplement our existing defenses. If we ever ran into another ambush, we would be better equipped to handle it. Okay, yes. This is all geeky stuff, but if you ever saw a demonstration of a KSS in action, you would get excited too. The cannon sounded like an enormous zipper when it was firing.
Even though its mount to the ship had a magnetic cushioning pad, it could still make the hull vibrate. Trust me, if you enjoy watching stuff explode, you would say the KSS is cool.
Chapter 9.
Major Reed, Nagatha called while Sammy was in her office. The Flying Dutchman was two jumps away from going through an Elder wormhole that was a two-day flight to the backstop wormhole connecting to Earth. 3 days. In 3 days, they would be home. Or they could see home, at least from a distance. Flipping her laptop closed to give the ship's AI her full attention, she sat upright in the chair.
Yes, Nagatha?
You have a message from Admiral Zhao.
Zhao? What? He's here? How can he?
No, he is not here. He instructed me to give you orders at this time.
Orders? She was instantly suspicious. I have orders.
These orders supersede your previous instructions.
Son of a fuck! She pounded the table. You knew about this?
Of course. Admiral Zhao instructed me not to reveal the existence of these secret orders until the ship reached these coordinates.
Of course he did. Shit.
Do you not wish to see the orders?
No. I mean, yes. I want to see the orders. It's the Admiral's prerogative to change my orders. Although it meant Zhao didn't trust her. Or he didn't trust Bishop.
The leader of the special mission group had approved allowing the Dutchman on detached service because he thought the old former star carrier was going to perform a simple recon.
What the hell did Zhao have planned? Show me the orders.
3 minutes later, she cradled her head in her hands, elbows on her desk.
Hell. You could not have given me a hint that my orders would change?
No. Admiral Zhao gave me strict instructions. He does outrank you, Major.
Reed supposed it was a good thing that the AI they relied on was obedient to the chain of command. Still,
Zhao outranks Bishop, too. Would you have concealed the information from Bishop?
That would be...
There was hesitation in Nagatha's artificial voice.
More difficult.
Thank you for letting me know where I stand.
Please understand, Joseph was my leader for a long time, the way you humans measure time. You and I have never had a formal relationship.